You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. New text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Every single week, every single Wednesday, we do mailbag. Hit us up with your voicemails, your text messages. That's exactly what we're doing today. So we want to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back. I had an interesting night last night. Headed out to Guaranteed Rate Field to watch Michael Kopech Day. It was dampered
by... managed to stay dry?
it was dampered by the damn August Chicago weather. Classic. Downpour for an hour caused a rain delay after two innings, and that was the conclusion of Michael Kopech's debut with the White Sox. But the two innings he did pitch were a lot of fun, and that place was alive for the first time in a long time. So all good things for Sox fans. It was just a little disappointing that the rain had to ruin it.
Yeah, and a tough way to end the night for those who fought through the rain delay and were there late into the evening because they were tied 2-2, right? And then they ended up giving up three runs in the ninth. So hate to see that happen in your home ballpark. But between Kopech's really promising couple of innings and then also Moncada going yard, a night where Sox fans probably felt a little bit better than they have all season long about the future of that ball club.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be interesting actually to see Kopech's full-length debut next time at home. So they're going to play Detroit. He scheduled a pitch at Detroit this weekend. And then coming home following weekend, they're playing the Red Sox at home. So that should be an even more interesting matchup coming from the original team that drafted him. So, Kopech looked really good. It was fun time. It was good time to see all Sox fans out there. And it was funny. I was reading through Twitter, and it was like, I've never seen this many Sox fans on the Metro before. I was reading a tweet from somebody who rides it daily, and, you know, he had to laugh a little bit. But it's nice to see that, you know, the team on the South Side is getting a little bit of attention, and there are actually fans out there sticking it out. So it was a pretty good crowd. 25,000-26,000 people probably out there before the rain delay. Another thing we got to correct here right off the top of the show, Matt, before we get into our mailbag. And mailbag, you can hit us up 331-979-1369. We get it. We're sorry. We had a brain fart. We forgot Tracy McGrady, and Vince Carter both were teammates in 2000 in the dunk contest. And that was one of the most iconic dunk contests of all time. And you just, you reminded me too. It's like, you remember Vince Carter's gif where he's like saying it's over.
Yeah, it's over. It's over, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, the reason that, we both kind of slipped on that one is because nobody cares about Tracy McGrady. No offense, T-Mac. Great player. I'll have to go back and rewatch some of T-Mac's dunks from that year, but it's not like 2000 was remembered as the year that Raptors teammates Vince Carter and T-Mac squared off in the dunk contest. No, 2000 dunk contest is synonymous with Vince Carter and only Vince Carter.
And then also some honorable mentions as far as teammates go. J.R. Smith and Chris Birdman Anderson, 2005.
Birdman!
J.R. Smith was a rookie. He was 19 years old with the Hornets, and Birdman, I think, was in his fourth year at that point. So that was another one that was brought to our attention, too. So thanks for that. Appreciate it. But yeah, you're right. Totally right about Vince Carter. It was the Vince Carter show, not the Vince and T-Mac show in 2000. So with that, let's get to our mailbag. Like we said, you can always hit us up on social media on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. If you're a relatively new listener, we'd love to hear from you, 331-979-1369. If you've been with us a long time, keep dropping us your text messages and your voicemails as well. All right, Matt, this first question comes from the 630. Pretty quick, pretty short and simple. If Zach LaVine becomes Bulls Ben Gordon, would you be happy with the contract that Zach LaVine signed? 4 years, $78 million. So this is an interesting comp. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's it is an interesting comp because Ben Gordon in his Bulls years was a really exciting player. I mean, a rookie winning sixth man, that, you know, that doesn't happen. Averaged 15 points per game as a rookie, and only started three of the 82 games he played. And then in successive years following, his scoring jumped to 16.9, then 21.4. And then 18-6, 20.7 in his final Bulls season. So right around a 43, 42, 44% shooter from the field overall. And the key here is Ben Gordon was a great three-point shooter. He never shot below 40% from three in his five seasons with the Bulls. Zach LaVine is not there yet. And I was actually talking with Josh Lloyd over on Locked On Fantasy last night about how Hoiberg and the Bulls would love it if LaVine can become a reliable shooter from behind that three-point line. And if he can go from the upper mid-30s and the high 30s to being more than a 40% three-point shooter, that will be great. But as far as the contract and the money you're making, I think the goal for the Bulls is that Zach LaVine proves himself over the coming seasons to be worthy of a four-year, $78 million deal, because they know that right now the sample of what they saw in his first handful of games coming back from his ACL was not a player that's worth that contract. They're hoping that he proves his way into being worth that contract. I think it would be kind of a disappointment if Zach LaVine's ceiling is Ben Gordon. And that's no knock on Ben Gordon. Ben Gordon was great in his young career as a member of the Chicago Bulls. But I think that the Bulls are expecting Zach LaVine to turn into more than that.
Yeah, I would think so too. And just looking at his numbers, the longevity of Ben Gordon's career pretty much started and ended with the Bulls. From the time he was 21 years old till he's 25, the drop-off, I mean, he had one okay season with Detroit. He wasn't anything like he was here in Chicago in his first 5 years. But to me, I think it would be a little bit of a disappointment if he was just a pure scorer like Ben Gordon was. You know, you talked about the points per game, which is nearly touching 20 points per game in his five seasons. But then I look at the rest of his stats, too, and I would hope that with the amount of weapons the Bulls do have on the offensive side of the ball this year, that Zach LaVine is more than a three-assist
per game type of player, a guy that's rebounding the ball at a higher clip than 3 rebounds a game. And that's kind of where you see Ben Gordon sits, and he hung around just around 1 steal per game too in his 5 seasons. So I think I'm with you. As far as the shooting goes, if he can be like a knockdown scorer the way Ben Gordon is, I'm cool with that, but I'd like to see a little bit extra from Zach LaVine's game. And I think there's more. I think his ceiling is higher than what Ben Gordon's was in the past. So if we're talking about like taking away his 3-point shooting, then absolutely, I'd love to see Zach LaVine turn into the 3-point shooter that Ben Gordon was. But like you said, I think the ceiling is definitely got to be higher for Zach LaVine. And the total amount of earnings Ben Gordon earned in his entire career was $84 million. Zach LaVine's getting paid $78 million for this 4-year contract. So it tells you a little bit of difference on how much these shooters were paid even just 10 years ago compared to now. So I think I'm with you too, Matt. I think Zach LaVine's ceiling's got to be way higher than what Ben Gordon was when he was here for 5 years.
Yeah, and I mean, you gave the number for his career earnings, and as far as his earnings with the Bulls, obviously coming in on a rookie deal, 3-year, $10.8 million on his rookie deal. The Bulls exercise in 2006, a $4.8 million option for the 7-8 season. Bulls extend a qualifying offer in the summer of 2007. He becomes a restricted free agent, and the Bulls end up signing him to a 1-year, $6.4 million deal for his final year with the Bulls. And then he got a 5-year, $50 million deal with Detroit, which was big money for Gordon. But that's where most of that career earnings came from. It's not like the Bulls ever paid Gordon any ridiculous contracts. They exercised an option and they gave him a 1-year deal worth $6.5 million. So when you're talking about player comps and what they are worth, because LaVine is on this contract, yeah, I think we are in agreement that if his ceiling caps out to be Ben Gordon, then that is not great value or equal value of what Gordon gave to the Bulls based on what they were paying compared to what they were paying him.
This is Corey Solomon, longtime Bulls fan. Hear a lot about the Bulls. I actually moved from Chicago, and I'm living in Los Angeles area. I stay in California, but I still keep up with the Bulls every day. I know more about the Bulls than people in Chicago do, and I'm in L.A. So to ask the question, I just want to know, I feel that the Chicago Bulls, bearing no injury, if they stay healthy, everybody keeps putting them down, saying they're gonna lose 27 games, they ain't gonna win, but maybe 27, maybe one game over and all this crap, which is a bunch of crap. If the Bulls do not, barring any injuries, get hurt, nobody gets seriously hurt, stay out for a while, the Bulls are guaranteed to win anywhere from 40 to 45 wins. 45 win team. I hear a lot of people saying that the Bulls 27, and that's, they probably won't win no more than that. So that's basically what you're telling me is that that's the same amount of wins that they got last year with a whole totally different team. This team is totally different than the team they have now. They got more scores, my less defense, but they got way more scores. So basically what you're telling me is that the team that they have now and the team that they had last year are the same. And that the team last year was horrible, and they won 27 games, and they wasn't even trying. So you mean to tell me they're going to win 27 games again this year? Somebody is wrong. The Bulls definitely going to win between 40 and 45 wins. Tell me your opinion on the matter. Thank you.
All right, Corey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All the way out in L.A., Bulls fans all over the country here. All right, Matt, I'm going to let you touch on this first. 40 to 45 wins next season for this Bulls team.
Corey,
what are you thinking?
Corey, I appreciate your optimism, man, but you are out of your mind. What makes you see 40 to 45 wins on this team? I know that you say, oh, totally different team from last year. Well, let's see. LaVine was on this team last year. Chris Dunn was on this team last year. Lauri Markkanen was on this team last year. Robin Lopez was on this team last year. Denzel Valentine, Bobby Portis, Justin Holiday. This is not a totally different team. What you're assuming here, and you said this multiple times, barring no injuries, so you're assuming a healthy Chris Dunn for a full season and a healthy Zach LaVine, all of a sudden this turns into a 40 to 45 win team. And I'm saying, show me why. Give me a reason why. Look, just because we have a healthy Zach LaVine does not necessarily mean that all of a sudden we're going to get a huge uptick in wins. Do you know, Corey, that Zach LaVine has not had a single season in his NBA career where he had a where his team had a better net efficiency rating with him on the court rather than off? And that was once again true for his stint with the Bulls last season. Just because Zach LaVine now is another year removed from a torn ACL and you are assuming he has a fully healthy season doesn't necessarily make this Bulls team better. It might make them worse if we're being perfectly honest. This is still a young, inexperienced team. They are going to have to juggle to figure out how to play Jabari out of position at the three. And I'm sorry, but basketball is a two-way game. You're sitting here saying, you know, Jabari can score, Zach LaVine can score. Okay, cool. Who's playing defense outside of Chris Dunn? Who is playing defense? LaVine is one of the worst defensive players in the league. Jabari Parker, okay, sure. You can highlight the fact that he showed some signs of actually giving a crap on the defensive end in their playoff series against Boston last year. Whoop-de-doo. That was a small handful of playoff games when Jabari decided to care about defense. And the first thing he does when he gets to Chicago is say, well, they're not paying me to play defense. Even if he like amps up his defensive effort a little bit, he's still not a great defensive player and certainly will get cooked on the defensive end at the three position. I'm sorry, but I just don't see this being a 40 to 45 win team. What in your mind, why? Where are those wins coming from?
Yeah, I'd like to know too, because I like the optimism. I will say that. It is nice to hear that, but 40 to 45 wins is a lot of wins. Think about the team the Bulls had last year, and like what you just said, how many of those guys are returning? Over half the roster is returning and going to play in some capacity at a high level and be a part of this team, be part of the rotation. You're talking about also having a bench where you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen with that bench. Think about the second unit, not even the starting five for a minute. You've got Cameron Payne, Denzel Valentine. Whether or not you're going to let Chandler Hutchison play three in your second unit, or you're going to run Justin Holiday, Denzel Valentine out there. Then you got Bobby Portis and Wendell Carter Jr. Look, as much as I love Wendell Carter Jr., and I think he's going to be a fantastic, fantastic NBA player, he's going to struggle this year. Every rookie does. So at that point, you need a strong bench in order to maybe make up for some of the holes that you do have in your starting five. And we'll see. I'm hoping they all gel together, but even if they do that, I think putting an expectation of wins between 40 and 45 is just too high. To have those expectations and then to be disappointed at the end of the season when they don't reach that, I just think those are unfair expectations for a very young team who now is really the only in the second year where Fred Hoiberg has had the same roster come in and be able to play together. So we'll see. Like you said, though, there's a lot of holes. And obviously, Zach LaVine, Jabari Parker, Lauri Markkanen all can put the ball in the hole. That's great. But can you play defense? Can you stop teams from scoring 115, 120 a night against you? And that'll be something that we'll find out early on in the season.
Even on the short end of Corey's projection here, you're talking about a 13-win improvement on a very young, inexperienced team that still has all sorts of flaws. And we have no idea how they're going to play together. 13-win jump, you're committed to your low-end prediction of a win total being a 13-win jump from that team last season. I think that is insanely high.
Call us back, Corey. We'd like to hear from you. Drop us some reasons why you think this team's a 40 to 45 win team, like legitimately. Because anybody I argue with that either wants to take the low end of the totem pole or take the high end of the totem pole as far as where the win total is going to be this season for this team, nobody gives me actual legit reasons backing up your argument. Like, everybody just says, oh, yeah, they're going to be better. They've got better talent. Well, what does that translate to? Give me some actual substantial details, some reasons why you think this team's going to win 40 or 45 games, or why this team's going to be the worst team in the NBA. So either whatever side you sit on, I want to hear some actual factual reasons, what you see behind any of this. Give us some reasons. Call us back. We'd like to hear from you. So anybody else out there who's listening, 331-979-1369, hit us up. We want to hear from you. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking more voicemails, we're taking more questions. 331-979-1369 is the line to hit us up. You can hit us up on Twitter, too, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Welcome back into Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck, Jordan Malley hanging out with you on a Mailbag Wednesday as we are nearing ever closer to September and NBA basketball picking up again. Before we jump into our next mailbag item, just wanted to give a quick shout out to our friends at King's Dining and Entertainment, located at 1500 North Clybourne in the heart of Lincoln Park here in Chicago. Our Bowling with Bobby Portis headquarters. It should be your football headquarters all NFL season long. They have a 220-foot bar, the longest bar in the city of Chicago, full-service restaurant, and over 50 HD TVs, not to mention the 16 lanes, 4 billiards tables, air hockey, darts, and more. Great venue for all of your sport watching and bowling and entertainment needs. With that, let us get to our next mailbag item. This is a text that comes from the 808. G'day, gentlemen. I was hoping to hear your thoughts regarding a debate my friend and I have about the importance of mentors in a team. The Bulls currently filled with young players, including Jabari and Levine. Although they have played in multiple seasons, it seems like they lack the veteran leadership that has playoff and winning experience needed in their respective positions. Mentorship is one of the reasons why I believe Markkanen exceeded expectations, partly due to Lopez's influence. I think the mean streak Markkanen showed at times was something drawn out because of how Lopez plays. Wade's influence on Butler was also the key to reaching superstar status while with the Bulls. Do you think the Bulls should invest in signing or trading for veteran players in specific positions to mentor the players that they are trying to develop? Or am I overemphasizing the need for mentors? I was thinking of trading for players like George Hill or Pat Beverly to mentor Chris Dunn, Jay Crowder for Zach LaVine, Parker, and Hutchinson. Do you believe mentorship is important? Would you sign Lopez again? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for checking in. I will let you take this one first,
Jordan. I liked the idea of Patrick Beverly like last year, 2 years ago, when they were looking for that other key piece. So I'm talking 2 years ago, before the rebuild. I do. I believe in mentorship as far as the young players go. I know we talked about it briefly about Wendell Carter Jr. or if the Bulls were going to take a big, should we keep Robin Lopez around for that same factor? And now while we see that Wendell Carter Jr. might be the most mature player out of anybody that was drafted and might not necessarily now be a necessity, but still, I think a guy that can come in and has been around the league, has been in the playoffs a ton, has been on winning teams, that is willing to come in and just, you know, ride the bench and also help these guys in day-to-day processes. Because you think about it, a lot of the Bulls roster is under 25 still. So while they've been in the NBA for a handful of years, a lot of these guys haven't been on winning teams before. So I think it's a good idea. But my problem is where do you find the roster space to do that? You know, you've got 14 guys on this roster already. You've got one open roster space available, and they're looking like they're going to use that on a young guy to see if they can take a flyer on somebody. It would mean that you would have to try and move, like we said again, like it sounds like a broken record, but Justin Holiday or Robin Lopez have to get moved off this roster to even consider something like that. The players they brought up, George Hill, Patrick Beverly, Jay Crowder, any of those guys, I get it, but I don't think the Bulls are going to be willing to give anything up in order to trade for those guys. And I'm pretty sure Patrick Beverly is like on a sizable deal, or at least something that's in the $8 to $10 million range. I'd have to go back and look at that. But when he did sign with the Clippers after getting traded, so that would be something maybe to look into. I don't know, but I do believe in the idea of mentorship as far as some of these younger guys go. Somebody that I thought about this offseason, I wish he didn't sign with the Atlanta Hawks, was Vince Carter. I thought Vince Carter, for what he's done in Sacramento and everything that the players were saying there, and a couple of the other stops he made before when he went to Memphis, a lot of those players have credited Vince Carter for being a really good locker room presence and a guy that's willing to sit down and mentor and also be able to play. So he was one of those guys on the mentor list, is top on the top part of my list, and Atlanta got a good one for a lot of the young guys on their team. So I like the idea. I just don't see, as far as logistically, how that could work this season.
So just to touch up on Beverly there, just checked on SpotRac. He has a $5 million non-guaranteed to finish out the contract he signed with Houston for 2018-19, unrestricted free agent in 2019. I like Pat Beverly. He's a feisty player. I know everybody knows about the rivalry that he's had with Derrick Rose over the years. And you know what might be a great veteran to bring into this team for mentorship role, as our texter here is suggesting. I do think you're overvaluing or overemphasizing the role of mentor, but clearly the Bulls saw value in not only Robin Lopez but Justin Holiday to be the veteran leaders of this team, and that's why they signed him, and that's why both of them are still here. When people kept talking about trading Lopez and or Holiday last trade deadline, and why we're all talking again about how Lopez needs to cede the starting center spot to Wendell Carter Jr., and with Valentine and now Chandler Hutchison, with LaVine starting at the two and Jabari at the three, like, where the hell is Justin Holiday going to play? Let's get this guy off our team. So, yes, veteran mentor leadership is important. I think Jordan and I have both talked about the fact that at some point these young guys, some of them are now young veterans, notably LaVine and Dunn and Jabari, if he sticks around. Those are the guys that you are going to ask to step into those leadership roles. And to your point, and you know, this isn't necessarily entirely related, but I just, you know, I thought it was funny, so I want to touch on it. You mentioned Dwayne Wade's influence on Butler being key to reaching Butler's superstar status while with the Bulls. You are 100% wrong there, my friend. Jimmy Butler's work ethic is what reached him to superstar status, and that began way before Dwayne Wade showed up. The only thing Dwayne Wade for Jimmy Butler was increase his ego to a part where it became a problem in the Bulls' locker room. That is the only thing that Dwayne Wade did for Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler earned everything he got, and his superstar status has nothing to do with the quote-unquote mentorship of Dwayne Wade. Wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. And if we're talking about mentorship role, Rajon Rondo did most of the mentoring on that 2016-2017 team.
Bingo.
Another thing that we're forgetting real quick, the requirement in order to be on this Bulls team seems like that you have to be from the city of Chicago. Patrick Beverly is from the city of Chicago. So if we're talking about a competitive team next year, like if we're talking about...
Is he repped by Priority Sports?
But if we're talking about a guy that's... Okay, say Cameron Payne doesn't work out. He just doesn't... It's not going to work. They see that this season. You need a backup point guard, and this team is floating somewhere between 30-35 wins, and you're on the cusp of potentially being a first-time playoff team next year. Patrick Beverly might not be a bad option if he can come back and be healthy and be your point guard off the bench. He's a feisty guy, plays a lot of good defense, and I always give him credit for the time that Lonzo Ball came into the league the first game of the year, and he was like, I'm going to the locker room. I'm going to go scare the shit out of him. He's banging on the Lakers locker room before the game, like screaming for Lonzo Ball. So that would be a guy that would be very interesting to have in this locker room. But I would say set those expectations for next year when he's a free agent. And we did get a question about like guys that aren't going to be superstars, but maybe pieces the Bulls can add on the cheap. He might not be a bad option if you need a backup point guard and a guy that has proved to be able to play defense and can run a second unit. He might not be a bad look.
And just to follow up there, Beverly, not a Mark Bartlestein client. He is represented by Kevin Bradbury of BDA Sports Management. So there goes that idea. I mean, yeah, he's a Chicago guy, but you need both pieces of that puzzle for him to get here.
What's going on? It's Mike from DC. Listen to you guys show a lot. And I got to say, Jordan, you're killing me, man. I think you may be the only person in Bulls Nation, not literally, but I think you may be the only person in Bulls Nation who actually believes that Fred Hoiberg can be a good coach. This man has proven otherwise pretty much his whole career. He hasn't been able to coach stars. He can't manage a locker room, can't get a hold of his players that have these egos and whatnot. So I really think you're reaching, saying that Hoiberg can be a good coach. Let me know what you guys think. I really would like an explanation on what makes you think Fred Hoiberg could be a good coach. All right, talk to you guys later.
All right, Mike, appreciate the call. It's funny, I do feel this way, though. I will be completely honest with you. You're not the first person to say this to me before, that I feel like I'm sitting on a hill by myself as far as why I think Fred Hoiberg can still be a coach. Here's a couple reasons for you. First of all, in defense of Fred Hoiberg, there's been less than five players on this roster that have overturned in the first 3 years of Fred Hoiberg's tenure as a Bulls play, as a Bulls head coach, that have actually stayed on this roster. You're talking about Cristiano Felicio, Bobby Portis, Denzel Valentine's only been here for 2 years, Robin Lopez, and Justin Holiday was on this roster for a combined 2 seasons. Last year, in the first season, Fred Hoiberg was here. So to be able to evaluate Fred Hoiberg, how are you able to evaluate a guy when you don't have a consistent roster, he wasn't given the tools that he was literally brought in to be? You're talking about bringing in a worn-out Dwayne Wade, a worn-out Rajon Rondo, trying to piecemeal together in a 40-win playoff team, and that's exactly what Fred Hoiberg did. As much shit as Fred Hoiberg has gotten because people think he can't quote-unquote handle a locker room, which might be evident considering the second year he was head coach here, things didn't look great. The Nico and Bobby fight didn't look great either, but those are things that might be a little bit out of his control. If we're talking about reasons why I still think Fred Hoiberg can be a good coach here, is one, the team that is assembled right now is the way the modern NBA is going. And if you want to win in this league, you've got to be able to run a high pace, pace and space offense. And that's what Fred Hoiberg was brought here to do. And to me, look at certain cases with players. Here's two examples real quick. Chris Dunn looked like he was a player that didn't even belong in the NBA in his rookie season. He came to the Bulls in 53 games, 13-6-4, and 2 steals. And he created a shot, basically, for Chris Dunn. Built up all that confidence in the month of December and January before he had some unexpected injuries. So taking a guy that looked like he didn't even belong in the NBA.
Nah, Chris, I mean, Jordan, I disagree with that. You can't say that Dunn looked like he didn't belong in the
NBA.
You
go watch that Timberwolves tape and you tell me if he belonged in the NBA or not.
I mean, the dude was playing with zero confidence because he was barely getting any playing time and was on a short leash with Tom Thibodeau. I watched that Chris Dunn rookie season, and I did not look at that Chris Dunn rookie season and say, oh, that is a sign of this guy was overvalued in the draft and he's going to have a bad NBA career. No, not everybody has a glowing, amazing rookie season where they go out and turn into one of the focal points of their team's offense and, you know, are pouring in buckets every night. That doesn't happen. Even with some of the lottery picks, that doesn't happen.
I was going to say, Chris Dunn was a top five pick, man. Like, if you're a top five pick, and the way he looked in his rookie year,
a top five pick who was playing for Tom Thibodeau.
True. My other point is too, Lauri Markkanen, I get he had a phenomenal year last year. Are you going to attribute all that success to just Lauri Markkanen's skill alone? Like, Fred Hoiberg put Lauri Markkanen in positions to be able to be successful last year. I think the players are buying into what Fred Hoiberg is dishing out more so than the fans are, and that's fine. But I'm saying, like, he's got the shit end of the stick, and that sort of narrative can only go for so long, and I understand that. That's why I'm saying this year is super important for him, and that's why we've said over the last month or so that Fred Hoiberg is probably got the most pressure on him outside of anybody in this organization right now to succeed this year. Like, yeah, you can talk as much as you want about Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker and the front office and the ownership, but Fred Hoiberg's got all the pressure to keep his job in the NBA this year. Fred Hoiberg can still be a great coach. That streak in December, it doesn't go without saying anything. The Bulls won 27 games with that roster last year. Think about that. 27 games with one of the worst rosters in the NBA. So to me, I think it's unfair to criticize Fred Hoiberg when he's had four guys overturn on this roster. Everybody else is gone.
You also left Jimmy Butler off that list, who did play for Hoiberg for more than one season, by the way, as did Pau Gasol. Listen, Your 27 win comment just now, you say that as if 27 wins is some grandiose accomplishment.
It's not, but think about roster that they have.
They were a couple of wins away from being a top three lottery team. So it's not like that is a great accomplishment to win 27 games. 27 games means you're a bad team. Yeah, the Bulls were kind of trying to be a bad team last year. That's kind of the point. But I just can't say that giving Fred credit for winning 27 games last year is just kind of a moot point. Like, I don't think that means anything. I don't. It's just a team that was tanking. And it's hard to judge and evaluate a coach of a team that is tanking, and you mostly look to player development. So to your point there, yeah, I'll give Fred some credit for the strong rookie season that Markkanen had. But really, most of that credit goes to two of his teammates getting in a fight and Markkanen being thrust into the starting lineup. Because if Markkanen doesn't get that opportunity, maybe he doesn't win that starting job at any point, and that starting job goes to Nico Mirotic, who sticks around all season long. Who knows? Part of the reason that they felt willing to trade Nico, outside of, well, one of these guys has to go, is because Markkanen was performing so well at the four. And the other thing that I'll say about this voicemail from Mike in DC is that we had this conversation, and it stemmed from our conversation about Jabari and where he's going to play this season in an episode last week that got a little crazy. I don't have a whole lot of faith in Fred Hoiberg being a good NBA coach. I said on that podcast, I believe it was last Monday, that the main reason Fred is here is not because he is some great offensive guru who's going to bring the Bulls into the modern NBA, who is some great offensive coach who can handle egos and mold young players. No, he is here and he is the head coach because he is a yes man. He is a yes man for a front office who wanted a yes man after dealing with a good coach who was very rough around the edges in Tom Thibodeau, who wanted their noses out of his business when it came to coaching and coaching decisions. That is the primary reason that Fred Hoiberg is here, to be a yes man. I believed that when the hire was made, and I still believe that now. And that is what I think about Fred Hoiberg any more so than whether or not he is a good coach in the NBA level, because to me, that answer is still a no.
I get it. My only argument, finally, for Mike is Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn only played 12 games together last year. So really, you're going to evaluate his first year in a rebuild where your three main pieces after trading Jimmy Butler only played a combined 12 games? Like, that's a little bit unfair on Fred Hoiberg's part, too. All I'm saying is it's not end-all, be-all, whether or not you believe in Fred Hoiberg or you don't, and it still remains to be seen, and I think that's why this season is more important than any of the three previous seasons that Fred Hoiberg's been coach. And we'll see. Maybe I am sitting on the hill by myself and thinking Fred Hoiberg can still be a good coach. I just can't rack anybody out of my brain right now that says, okay, you're going to stick him in here and he's going to...
Well, it's not about who replaces him at this moment, Jordan. The question is, do you believe in Fred as an NBA coach? And even to your point of like, well, there's been so much roster turnover, whatever. Okay, fine. But regardless of the roster turnover, even just on like a game and night by night basis, there are examples of Fred making head scratching decisions as far as plays he's trying to call out of timeouts, not making adjustments at halftime based on what their opponents are doing offensively and defensively. Like, just like the basketball X's and O's stuff. Regardless of who he's got playing on any given night, I have, and I think this might be what Mike is kind of alluding to. Like, give him a break for the roster turnover if you want, but just from a coach's seat, how does Fred look making decisions in mid game and game to game and game prep? Because I think that there are certain examples of him not being a glowing candidate for a contract extension when it comes to stuff
that's
like
fine.
That.
Also, then are you going to give him credit for going up 2-0 in the Boston Celtics series when they were the 8th seed overall and Boston was number 1 overall? You going to give him?
I'm sorry. Who won that series?
I know. Are you going to give him credit for going 2-0 though?
Why would I give him credit for that? The Bulls lost that series.
If that's the case, and you think Fred Hoiberg's just a yes man, then who's really controlling this team on a day-to-day basis and a night-to-night basis when they're on the floor? You know, John Paxson is set...
The front office.
Right. So then it goes back to them.
Well, then it's on them to find a yes man who might be a better coach than Fred Hoiberg. Because you can have a yes man who's also a better coach than Fred Hoiberg. That is not hard to find, in my opinion.
Not hard to find? Maybe for the Bulls it would be. But I don't.
Well, their search would be contained to, you know, various, you know, small town cities in Iowa. So, we, you know, keep that in mind.
All right, Mike, appreciate the call.
Let's take one more voicemail and then let's get out of here before we just get overloaded with snark today. This one comes to us from our friend Jeremy in Idaho.
What's up, fellas? This is Jeremy from Idaho. Again, love the show. Thank you. Something you guys said maybe a few weeks back that I just can't stop thinking about. And with respect, I strongly disagree. You said that toward the end of the season, if the Bulls are in the playoff hunt, you would rather see them lose than make the playoffs and maybe get swept. Now, would you really want the Bulls to have a 2% chance of winning the lottery? Or would you want that young core to have the playoff experience? Because to me, the playoff experience is a no-brainer. How much more will they grow with that experience? Anyway, let me know what you guys think. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for the call, Jeremy. Matt, I'm going to let you touch on this first.
I think you know where I stand on this because Jeremy called in to refute the point. He said, you guys said yada, yada, yada about going back to the lottery as opposed to the playoff hunt. That was my take, and I think, Jordan, you were maybe arguing more towards it. You know, it might not be the worst thing if they make the playoffs. And, you know, just to clarify, Jeremy, I think you're muddling the waters a little bit here. I was saying, say they come in March 1st and are a handful of games out of the eighth and final playoff spot. Yes, to me, it would be in their best interest to lose the majority of their games to finish out the season, especially if a few other bad teams are within their grasp for the Bulls to leapfrog a couple of spots in those lottery rankings. Then, yes, it would be a advantageous situation for the Bulls to lose most of those games. I'd rather see that happen than for them to fight their way into the eighth and final playoff spot. Playoff experience, yes, is important for a young team that is trying to gear towards competition and deep playoff runs. That is not the case next year. The Bulls can still be a very young team, will still be a very young team in the 2019-2020 season. And if you're talking about them gaining the valuable experience of going to the playoffs in that season, then I might be starting to agree with you, as that's when the Bulls should starting to be a competitive team, and maybe a playoff appearance would do them some good. This upcoming season? Nah. Give me the lottery. Give me the ping pong balls. Give me the ping pong balls. We're still sitting here talking about how we don't know if Jabari is going to just be a one and done player or if he fits at all. We're talking about we don't know if Markkanen's good enough to be the number one guy on a team, but hopefully a number two. We don't know if Zach LaVine's going to pan out. We don't know if Chris Dunn's going to improve offensively. You need to maximize your chances of hitting on a star in the lottery. And that has not changed for this Bulls team coming into this next season. And your point about, well, okay, what are you going to give yourself a 2% chance at hitting? No, Jeremy, no. You're talking about if you are on the bubble, outside looking in on the playoffs, and you have an opportunity to maybe, as I said, leapfrog a couple of lottery teams by losing the majority of your games in March and April. You're not talking about a 2% chance. Remember about the 2019 draft lottery reform as far as how those percentages break down. Top three worst teams all have an equal 14% chance across the board. Fourth, 12.5. Fifth, 10.5. Sixth, 9. Seventh, 7.5. Eighth, 6. 9, 4.5. Those are all huge jumps in percentages for the number one overall spot. So yeah, it's not just like they're going to lose a bunch of games to finish the season instead of going to the playoffs to give themselves a very tiny outside chance. No, if the Bulls are borderline bad and decide to be bad, then they can give themselves a real shot at a number one pick or a top three pick, and I would much rather see that than a first-round playoff exit next year. I'm not discrediting your point about playoff experience being valuable for a young team. I'm saying for this Bulls team, not yet. Tell me that in 1920, and I'll agree.
The only reason why I would argue for making the playoffs would be to be able to pitch a top-tier star to come here and have a little bit of intrigue. I think if you're back in the lottery again, you're still another season off from being that type of team to sign a free agent, and that might be fine. That's okay. But if your goal is to try and to attack one of these top-tier free agents in 2019, then making the playoffs is probably not a bad move. That's a good pitch saying,
yeah, but
them making the playoffs in 2018-19, that's great, fine. And I know you wouldn't like this idea either, but A plus B equals C. If the Bulls are going to make the playoffs and be a 38 to 42 win team and they squeak out an 8 seed, doesn't that necessarily mean that maybe Jabari Parker plays better than advertised, and then we're talking about potentially picking up that option for next year, and then you're out of the money? So I can see it from both angles. The playoff experience to me, getting your ass kicked in the first round, to me, it's kind of a toss-up. Like, to me, that I would rather be back in the lottery than just get your ass kicked, and then you don't get the superstar free agent 2019. If you make the playoffs, get your ass kicked as the 8th seed in the first round, and then you get the superstar free agent, then that's fine. Then it was worth it. But if you don't get any of those, then it's hands up. Okay, well, what are we doing?
Right, exactly. You don't want to be stuck in the middle. And, you know, okay, stuck in the middle with an old team, stuck in the middle with a young team looks better, but still. And the other thing that I would say to you, Jeremy, is, and we have mentioned this before, but I guess it bears repeating, the 2019 NBA draft class is much weaker than the 2018 draft class. Say the Bulls draft somewhere 7 through 10, no way they get a player with the ceiling like Wendell Carter Jr. But there are a couple of very exciting prospects that are projected to be like the top three, maybe the top four. And that is another reason why, if the Bulls are on the outside looking in come March 1st, I would not mind a tad if they lost all of their remaining games and leapfrog their way to the top of the lottery list. Because they still need to add talent for this team rebuilding to actually go places and be competitive in the post-Warriors, whoever sees his power NBA. They need another swing at a potential star player in the lottery. And in 19, those chances are smaller and fewer. So yeah, that's why I want the lottery.
They're probably looking and licking their chops at the top five prospects, because three of the top five prospects are Duke prospects. RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish,
Zion Williamson,
and also Zion Williamson. Yep. So you've got three of the top five potential prospects going top five, top seven as Duke prospects too. So keep that in mind. But I see what Jeremy's saying in getting to the playoffs and getting that experience. For some of the guys that haven't been there, Jabari's been there before. Lauri Markkanen's never been there. Chris Dunn's never been there. Zach LaVine. The list goes on and on down the bench. Bobby Portis has a little bit of experience. Denzel Valentine, same thing, a little bit of experience. But outside of that, none of these guys have legitimate playoff experience. So I understand from that. It honestly is going to depend how quickly this team gels together. If they have chemistry and they're all gelling together and this team gets off to a hot start 2-3 months into the season, we're talking about meaningful games in January, February, and March, then maybe we can talk about the accelerator being pressed even more so than it is right now. But I think if I had to go swing one way or the other, I would probably now swing towards maybe being in the top five of the lottery. But I just realistically, I don't see that happening unless there's an injury on this team or multiple injuries.
Yeah.
I just don't see them being bad enough to be in the top five.
And, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that they would. I would just say, you know, and I don't even think that the front office would necessarily jump on this opportunity. But if it were me running things and they were outside looking in, I'd try to lose. I would tank again. Like you're saying, they may not be bad enough to, over the course of an 82-game season, be one of the five worst teams in the league. I don't necessarily just agree with that across the board. I think that the Bulls could be the fourth or fifth worst team in the league if things shake out the way I'm seeing them shake out, if things don't go well. But I'm saying I would make a concerted effort to be one of the worst teams in the league for the final month and a half if we're outside looking in and we're looking at those 2019 ping pong balls. That's what I'm saying. And then to your point about the, if you make the playoffs, maybe that draws some eyes in 2019 free agency. Yeah, okay, but does a first-round exit where you maybe get swept actually do that? Maybe this team surprised people by snagging a playoff spot in the weak Eastern Conference. either way, I think we both agree that it's not like the Bulls have a chance to sign any of the big name free agents in 2019 anyway. Klay's not coming here. I don't think Kemba's coming here. Kyrie's not coming here. Jimmy's not coming here. Kawhi's not coming here. So it's not like that matters. But, you know, when I said, if you're talking about the playoff experience and the value, and you're talking to me about that in 2019, 2020, when this young team is starting to get a little bit better and gearing towards competing, yeah, fine. And then that comes into, that also comes into effect. The maybe drawing eyes of some 2020 free agents. And then, of course, 2021, the big one, Anthony Davis. If the Bulls in 2019-20 and then 2021 make a couple of valiant efforts as a bottom-seeded playoff team, maybe that's enough to pique Anthony Davis's curiosity.
I think if the Bulls team, this Bulls team is playing meaningful games in February and March next season, regardless if they make the playoffs or not, I think that's a step forward. And that's what you can hope for as a Bulls fan in 2018 and 2019. Just being realistic. Like, if the Bulls are playing meaningful games, and the Bulls have a really, we went through the Bulls schedule, they have a really difficult March. Really, really difficult March schedule to end the season. The last 6 weeks, a lot of playoff teams in there. A lot of top teams.
Give me them losses. Give me them losses.
So if they're playing in meaningful games, I think as a Bulls fan, you should feel good about yourself. You should feel good about this team. But if we're talking about another tanking season, it's going to be brutal as a Bulls fan, but there might be some light at the end of the tunnel if you do end up with the top five pick. If they're gelling towards the end of the season, that's the most important part. If Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine are all guys that are competing at a high level and gelling together, that's the most important part of anything else. Regardless of wins, regardless of playoff appearances, regardless of ping pong balls, that's the main focus here is player development, the guys that you already have.
See, so I agree with most everything you said there, except for including ping pong balls in more important than, because I still don't believe that the Bulls have the number one guy. I want it to be Markkanen, but I have a tough time believing it. I think if he is the second best player on your team can go places. But, and again, Jeremy, your point is not lost on me about young teams gaining valuable experience going to the playoffs and taking that next step. You're absolutely correct on that. But I'm saying wait a year before that's true. This season, with a shallow 19 draft class, I want the Bulls back in the lottery and I want them at the top.
The only reason why I can't buy into that is the pure fact that I've heard the front office say that we're not tanking anymore, that that's not the goal anymore, that basically that was a one-and-done type of thing.
I know. I'm saying what I want.
Yeah, right.
What I think is in the best interest of the team. I agree with you. Obviously, the front office is gearing towards and trying to be competitive this season. If I were in their shoes and this situation plays out where they're on the bubble, what I would do is steer into the tank again and say, let's try again next year.
Thank you, everybody, to all the voicemails, all the text messages that we've gotten sent in. We'll probably do an extended episode, do another one tomorrow. We've gotten a ton of voicemails and a ton of text messages we didn't get to. So if you want to drop us something between now and then, hit us up, 331-979-1369, or on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, or on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Hit us up, 331-979-1369. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. Make sure you hit us up with your voicemails and your text messages. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com